appreciate the good song selection. Now, that was a very appropriate, some very appropriate songs. Thank you, fellas, for passing those out. Well, this morning, I want to introduce to you the Abraham family. This is them on the right, father, mother, son, and daughter. The son is Tanish Matthew Abraham. Anybody here heard of Tanish? Nobody? Nobody's heard of Tanish? This is Tanish at age 11 getting his graduate degree from, I think it's American River College. And he is probably what we would, he's born in 2003, so he's about 14 years old now. But he is what is described loosely, there's a technical definition for a child prodigy, but we would probably describe him as a child prodigy. His parents, as you might guess, perhaps from their appearance, are from India. They are Americans. They immigrated to the United States, and I believe that Tanish was born here. And I want to tell you a little bit about his accomplishments through his young age, but so that you will understand that Tanish and I are so similar. I'm going to give you what he was doing at a particular age and what I was doing at the same age so that you'll see that we could almost be twins. First of all, Tanish at age 2 was reading and could remember everything that he read. At that point, I was still drooling oatmeal. But he was reading already and could recall all of that. At age 4, he became a member of Mensa. Now, the only qualification to become a member of Mensa is you have to be in the top 2 percentile of the general population on a standardized intelligence or IQ test. Tanish scored 99.9% in the intelligent quotient test. At age 5, he had already completed the math courses that Stanford University provides for gifted children. He did all the courses through 5 grades for gifted children in 6 months. I was able to identify 8 basic colors with some prompting. No, no, what's that other color? My dad is here. He can confirm that I accomplished this if he's not too ashamed. At age 7, Tanish was taking classes in geology and astronomy. I had managed to master blowing soap bubbles. Not an easy task. At age 9, I wonder if Tim remembers this, Tanish was invited and did speak at a NASA conference. Because of his studies in astronomy and geology, that sort of thing. At age 10, he graduated high school. At age 11, Tanish received 3 associate degrees. Those were degrees in math and physical science, general science, and foreign language studies. Now, Tanish is an exceptional young person, and obviously, that's not the measure of a typical young person. In order to prepare for this introduction, I spent a good bit of time reading about child prodigies. Not just those that are living now, but over several centuries and other gifted children. And by the end of that, I really felt like a worthless sluggard in terms of what I've been able to accomplish. But that's the wrong way to think. And that's the point I want to make to you this morning. When you look at someone like Tanish or some of the other child prodigies, maybe the first thing that comes to our minds is, you know, I could do great things if I had his superior or extraordinary intelligence. Is it only child prodigies who can do great things that can be significant in their own environment? I think it's a mistake for us to always be thinking about what we can't do. And this morning, I'm talking to young people. I don't normally do this, try to focus primarily on just one section of our of the assembly. But I really want to talk to young people this morning, and not so much to older folks. And I want to talk to young people who are so young that they can barely listen to me. I know that Clayton is busy filling out Douglas's sermon notes, so he's probably not going to be able to pay attention. But down to that age, practically, I want you to be listening to me. And I want you to understand that the drumbeat for young people so often is, well, when you get older. For instance, if you go to Disney World, you ever seen one of these? Well, when you get to be that tall, then you get to ride. In fact, when you're a kid, it always seems that everything is in the future. When you get a little older, you'll be able to ride the rides at Disney World. When you get a little older, you can get your learner's permit. You have to be 15. And when you get 16, then you can drive. You can't vote until you're 18. And I remember as a kid thinking, my whole life, I'm waiting for my life to start. When I can get to each of these milestones of privilege and be able to do things. And if you're not careful, young people, you begin to think, well, you know, I just can't do anything. I'm just a kid. That's the wrong way to think. If it seems like life is always out in front of you, you can't do what you want to do until you're older, then this sermon is for you. This morning, I'm going to continue with kind of a series. We talked about husbands and wives. And I want to talk about young people with a focus on Ephesians 6, 1 and 2, the text that Daniel read. Children, obey your parents in the Lord, for this is right. Honor your father and mother. This is the first commandment with a promise. And my purpose in our study this morning is to emphasize that even young people, very young people, have both responsibility and influence. And my encouragement to you young people this morning is to think seriously about serving God regardless of how young you are. If you're able to understand what I'm saying, there are things that you need to do in order to be pleasing to God. Some of the most outstanding individuals in the Bible are known by their activities in their youth. I want you to consider some of these young people. For instance, we know that Joseph, in the beginning of Genesis chapter 37, is identified as 17 years old. Now, that's a little older than some that I'm hoping to talk to this morning, but he was a young person, and at a very young age, he is sold into slavery by his brothers, taken to a foreign land, where he is placed in a household and prospers there, becomes steward over the entire household, but a problem arises, as you well know the story. Potiphar, his master's wife, is encouraging him to engage in immoral behavior, and he resists, and in fact, is put into prison. Now, I don't know exactly the time frame from the beginning of Genesis 37, when we're told he's 17 years old, to the time that he's in prison. I do know that he was put in charge of the grain production of Egypt when he was 30 years old, according to Genesis 41 and verse 46. But I think it was a fairly short time period in Potiphar's household, and yet Joseph shows tremendous character and determination to do what is right, despite him being young and in adverse circumstances. Here's another person you need to think about. We know that Samuel began serving the Lord as a young boy. You recall the story in the beginning of 1 Samuel that his mother Hannah was barren, didn't have a child. She prayed to God for a child, promising that if God would grant her a child, that she would dedicate this child to the service of the Lord. She has a son. His name is Samuel. She brings him to Eli at the tabernacle there at Shiloh, and Samuel begins serving the Lord. And it's interesting how many times in just chapter 2, it is stated that Samuel was a boy and that he was serving the Lord. In verse 18, he was ministering before the Lord, a boy clothed with a linen ephod. Down in verse 26, now the boy Samuel continued to grow both in stature and in favor with the Lord and also with man. What's interesting is that in that chapter, there is a clear contrast between Samuel, who even at this young age is serving the Lord, and Eli's sons, who are reprehensible individuals. And the contrast, I believe, is on purpose. Eli's sons may have been men, old enough to force people to give, Israelites to give to them, portions of sacrifices that didn't belong to them, but they weren't godly individuals. But here's Samuel, with whom God communicates, and this is an individual who went on to become one of the most influential people in Israel's early history. Or consider this individual, Josiah. Can you imagine becoming president of the United States at age 8? He became king of the southern kingdom of Judah when he was 8 years old. Now, I believe, and you probably would agree, that he probably had counselors. He may not have been making a lot of his own decisions initially, but pretty early in his reign, he reigns 31 years, pretty early in his reign, he begins extensive religious reforms in Judah, despite the fact that his father and grandfather were both reprehensible individuals, ungodly men. And so the statement is made in 2 Kings 22 and verse 2, and he did what was right in the eyes of the Lord and walked in all the way of David his father and did not turn aside to the right or to the left. Here was an individual who from very early on was determined obviously to serve God. And his response to the finding, the discovering of the book of the law in the temple when they're repairing the temple and the book that was lost to Israel apparently, to Judah rather, was found. Josiah's response is repentance and the determination to change behavior. He was an exceptional individual, even from his youth and through the rest of his reign. And then, of course, Daniel. Daniel's one of my favorites in the Old Testament litany of people who are faithful. I don't know that there's anything negative said about Daniel anywhere in Scripture. He was taken as a captive in his youth to Babylon. A lot of commentators surmise that he was in his mid to late teens. We know that Daniel served for a long time in Babylon through changing of empire. And so he must have started as a very young man. In fact, in the beginning of Daniel in chapter 1, the word that's used there is talking about a young person. And Daniel has this determination to serve God, even when others are trying to trip him up because of jealousy and envy at the privilege and the honor that was bestowed upon him because of his ability. And so here are four examples in Old Testament history, and we could probably find others, David perhaps, or others, of individuals who in their youth were dedicated to serving God. Now, what made these individuals pleasing to God wasn't that they were child prodigies. It wasn't that they scored in the 99.9 percentile of the general population of Judah or Israel. We don't know anything about that. What made these individuals stand out was their willingness to serve God, even in their youth and even in difficult circumstances. And so, young people, I want to talk to you about your responsibility. In the text that was read earlier in Ephesians 6, verses 1 and 2, I want you to note something about the passage. The passage does not begin, "Parents, make your children mine." Now, I believe parents need to see that children follow their admonition, that they follow their word. I think children need to be disciplined if they don't mind. But when Paul writes to children about this relationship, he writes to the children. He says, "Children, obey your parents in the Lord." That verse is talking to you, not just your parents. In fact, so is verse 2, "Honor your father and mother." This is the first commandment with a promise. That's cited from Exodus chapter 20 and verse 12. That was the fifth commandment of the Decalogue. Does it strike you as interesting that when God basically summarized the core moral responsibility of His people in 10 laws, one of them had to do with children honoring their father and mother. That's an important thing for the stability of society. And we see what happens in cultures like our own, where that's becoming increasingly less and less practiced or important to individuals. Now, I believe that honor, as we see from 1 Timothy 5 and other passages, would imply more than obedience. But obedience to your parents is one of the ways that you honor them. You may not think about that when your parent says, mother or father says, here's what I want you to do. I want you to go and I want you to clean your room. You think, oh, I don't want to clean my room. I want to go outside and play, or I want to mess with my computer, or I need to Twitter the president, or something like other than what your parent has said. But when you go and do what your parent has said, you honor them and you obey God. Because God's the one who established this relationship. It's God speaking when He says, children, obey your parents. You need to honor God. You need to obey God. There are lots of other passages that talk about the importance of obeying our parents and the reason why we need to do that. Beyond even just the simple reason that that's what God tells children to do, I want you to look at Proverbs 4, verses 1 through 9. This is just a sample passage. You could go through the first 9 chapters of Proverbs and multiply this particular point several times. Read along with me. Hear, O sons, a father's instruction, and be attentive that you may gain insight. Listen to your parents so that you can learn and you can gain wisdom about how to live in this world. For I give you good precepts. Do not forsake my teaching. When I was a son with my father, tender, the only one in the sight of my mother, he taught me and said to me, let your heart hold fast my words. Keep my commandments and live. Your parents will teach you things that will help you avoid tragic mistakes. Mistakes that sometimes can follow you for the rest of your life. Sins that cast long shadows over the rest of your days. Get wisdom, he says in verse 5. Get insight. Do not forget, do not turn away from the words of my mouth. Do not forsake her, and she will keep you. Now we're talking about wisdom. Get wisdom. She will keep you. Love her, and she will guard you. Of course, the tendency of most of us when we're young is to be foolish, not listen, have to discover everything for ourselves. But what the proverb writer is saying is if you'll listen to your parents, you can gain a lot of information, you can learn precepts, you can gain insight, you can get wisdom that'll save you a lot of heartache, make your life so much better. The beginning of wisdom is this. Get wisdom, and whatever you get insight. Prize her highly, and she will exalt you. She will honor you if you embrace her. She'll place on your head a graceful garland. She'll bestow on you a beautiful crown. Talking about wisdom, but that's why we obey our parents, because they are trying to convey to us wisdom. Let me tell you how important it is for young people, for children, to obey their parents. Under the old law in Deuteronomy 21, in verses 18 through 21, do you know what the penalty was for the unrepentant, rebellious son? Read the passage with me. If a man has a stubborn and rebellious son who will not obey the voice of his father or the voice of his mother, and though they discipline him, will not listen to them. So right away in verse 18, we come to understand we're not just talking about the child who forgets to feed the dog. Dad says, feed the dog every night. Did you feed the dog? No, I forgot, or I didn't do it. We're not talking about that kind of a situation. We're talking about a son who is repeatedly rebellious, unrepentant, will not respond to discipline. Parents have tried to discipline him. Then his father and mother shall take hold of him and bring him out to the elders of the city at the gate of the place where he lives. And they shall say to the elders of this city, this our son is stubborn and rebellious. He will not obey our voice. He's a glutton and a drunkard. Those are just descriptions of people who didn't control themselves, who lacked self-control. Then all the men of the city shall stone him to death with stones. So you shall purge the evil from your midst. When a child will not obey parents, God says that's an evil. And the penalty for that ultimately was the stoning of the child. Can you imagine that? Now, I think it would take a lot for parents probably to have to haul their son in front of the elders of the city and say, this our son is stubborn and rebellious, a drunkard and a glutton, knowing that the penalty for that is that he's going to die. And all the men of the village pick up stones and they stone him until he's dead. You think it's unimportant whether you obey your parents or not? Well, that's exceedingly important. In fact, when Paul described people who just rejected any knowledge of God or His will, he said they get involved in all kinds of sin. In fact, Paul summarized some of them. He says they were filled with all manner of unrighteousness, evil, covetous, malice. They're full of envy, murder, strife, deceit, maliciousness. They're gossip, slanders, haters of God, insolent, haughty, boastful, inventors of evil. Disobedient to parents. Foolish, faithless, heartless, ruthless. Does that seem like it belongs in that list? I mean, is it any big thing if you don't mind your parents? I mean, after all, they don't understand your life. They are so old, they don't know anything anymore. Is it important that you obey your parents? Paul says when people don't want to acknowledge God, God gives them up to a debased mind, and this is the kind of stuff they run to. Don't run there. Similar thing in 2 Timothy chapter 3, verses 1 through 3. But understand this, Paul writes to Timothy, then in the last days there will become times of difficulty, for people will be lovers of self, lovers of money, proud, arrogant, abusive, disobedient to their parents. Paul says to Timothy, listen, when things go into chaos, that's part of it. People don't mind their parents. Children don't mind their parents, don't obey them. And so your responsibility is to honor your parents. Now, part of that obviously involves providing for them if they have need as they grow older. 1 Timothy 5 would talk about that. It's not really my focus because I'm looking at younger people this morning, and usually that's not the circumstance that arises in those cases. But honoring also involves obedience. And so hopefully young people are listening. I want to tell you something else about your privilege. You young people do not understand how much influence you have on other people, and particularly people of your own age. Young people are very sensitive to the opinions of their peers, to weigh their friends, people of the same age and same environment, the way they are treating them. As a young person, I want to be accepted. I want to be esteemed. I want to be valued. I want to be liked by the people that I consider to be my peers, my friends. And it is devastating when there's a group of young people and they ostracize someone from that group who's the same age and maybe has the same kind of environment. They ostracize, they push that person out of the group because they're a little different in some way. Maybe they dress differently. Maybe they're not as smart as people tend to think about that. Maybe they're not athletic like others in the group. Or whatever. Maybe they don't like the same board games. It can be trivial, but it is devastating when young people push someone out of their group. In fact, in the public schools, one of the biggest problems that teachers and others are struggling with is bullying. Where young people bully others who are different. Let me tell you something about chickens. You can have a bunch of chickens together, and they'll do fine, until one of them accidentally pecks one of the others and draws blood. Or if a chick, for one reason or another, gets hurt and there's the color of blood. And the rest of the chicks will peck that chick to death. You know why? Because he's different. He's got red on him. They're attracted to that. They'll peck and peck until they kill the chick. That's why a lot of times in the big chicken farms, they've got these chickens in little cages separate from each other because the conditions under which they raise those chickens tend to make for neuroses in the birds, and they will peck each other and kill one another. And unfortunately, sometimes we humans, particularly when we're young, we are just the same. Anybody who's different gets pecked, so to speak. And so I'm going to say to you young people, you need to be supportive of one another. You need to practice kindness toward one another. I know when you're a young kid, maybe you don't think about those things. There's so many things going on in life, and you're planning what you want to do when you get out of school. After the day of school, you're going to go out and play, or you've got plans for what you want to do for the summer, everything. When we don't think about how our behavior affects others, I'll tell you what, even at a very young age, we can learn to be kind toward others. Ephesians 4:32. Oh, I'm sorry. This is for adults, right? Or would this be for anybody who wants to please God? Well, it'd be for anybody, wouldn't it? Be kind to one another, tender-hearted, forgiving one another, as God in Christ forgave you. You know what I think about when I think of tender-hearted? I think of somebody who can look at somebody else and see a weakness and want to help. Tender-hearted. Someone who is not hard and harsh, but instead is compassionate toward others who maybe have some sort of difficulties or are different in some way. Colossians 3:12. Put on then as God's chosen ones, holy and beloved, compassionate hearts, kindness, humility, meekness, and patience. Someone says, well, this is written to Christians, right? Yes, it is. Yes, it is. And young people, our prayer, the prayer of everyone here, all of us adults, is that you will become a Christian. And you can begin working on these kinds of qualities, the character of God's disciples, the Lord's disciples, by putting on compassionate hearts, kindness, and patience with others who are different. You need to be supportive of one another. Be careful of what you say to others. I read something this week I thought was profound. What you say can be forgiven, but it's often not forgotten. There's a lot of truth to that. I've unfortunately said things that I wish I had never said, and I've asked for forgiveness from various people over the years. But the sad thing is, you can't undo that, and people's memories retain those things. And it hurts. And so you'll see one young person kind of off by themselves because the others in that same age group have been unkind. They've said snotty things. Do you know what I mean when I say snotty? Can you say that from the pulpit, Tim? Okay, Tim says he wouldn't, but I guess you can. They're saying unkind things, and they're driving this person off by themselves. I'll tell you something that'll just absolutely break your heart. It's to read about a person who is 9, 10, 11 years old who commits suicide because they have been isolated from all of their friends because of the unkind things and deeds that have been done toward them. That should never happen. Another passage written by Paul. Now the works of the flesh are evident. Sexual immorality, impurity, sensuality, idolatry, sorcery. Those are some serious things. Enmity, strife, jealousy, fits of anger, rivalries, dissension, divisions, envy, drunkenness, orgies, and things like these. I warn you, as I warned you before, that those who do such things will not inherit the kingdom of God. You can't be pleasing to God if your life exhibits jealousy, rivalries, and envy. But you know what kids do sometimes, young people do, and young people, you need to be aware of this. You need to understand how dangerous this is. They vie with one another to who's going to be the most popular. And so if you want to be my friend, you can't be friends with so-and-so. Why? Why can't you both be friends? Why can't you support one another? Why can't you put away jealousy and envy and that kind of rivalry and just be friends with everyone? No shame in that. There's enough love to go around. But young people sometimes behave that way. They peck the oddball. They vie with one another to see who's going to be friends with whom. When what they ought to be doing is including others as much as possible. Supporting them. Helping them grow and become stronger individuals. We can do this. What about siblings? Siblings, that's baby pigs, right? No, siblings are your brothers and sisters. Siblings are the other kids in your family. And my experience has been over the years that sometimes even those who would treat others outside, other young people outside their family pretty well, will be absolutely nasty and rude, even violent with their own siblings. You are forbidden to talk to Cheryl and Vicky after this sermon. Why would siblings be an exception to any of these things that we've said about the way we ought to treat others? In fact, I would think they would get preferential treatment, if anything. I have a brother who's 9 years younger than I am. Do you know how irritating that is? I will probably send this to Andrew just so he can hear it. So he was always 9 years behind me because our ages didn't change. Yeah, you understand. And so he was never interested in the same things I was interested in. And he was a little kid and he was always wanting to do what I wanted to do. And it was annoying. And I will tell you, there were times I did not behave very well towards Andrew. We ought to be kind to our siblings. We ought to be careful what we say to them. We ought to be not jealous or envious of our brothers and sisters. We ought to treat them well. Debbie and I have two sons, as most of you know, David and Jonathan. They are almost exactly 2 years apart. They are named after King David and Saul's son, Jonathan. Both, I think, outstanding individuals in the Old Testament. Part of the reason they were named after those individuals. And so we told them that in the Bible, David and Jonathan were good friends. Jonathan loved David like his own soul. And the two of you will get along or we will bang your heads together. In other words, we expect that you will be good friends. And to this day they are. Did they ever tussle? Sure, we had to use shock treatment. They tussled sometimes, like brothers do. But they got along pretty well because that's what was expected of them. And you young people, you can do that. Parents, you need to make your children do that. See that they do that. Just a kid? Just a kid? Young people, you don't have to wait until you're older to begin serving God and pleasing Him. You can show your respect for God by honoring your parents. That's what Jesus did. In Luke chapter 2 and verse 51, when they found Him in the temple, answering and asking questions, and He went with them back to Nazareth, and the Bible says, and He was submissive to them. You ever thought about that? Jesus was perfect. His parents weren't. Well, that's true of all of us, right? All of us young people. We're perfect and our parents don't know what's going on. But we still could be submissive just like Jesus. I'm being facetious. You can support and encourage your friends, your peers. There have been some young people in this congregation who've been hurt by others. And we just don't need to be doing that. We need to be supporting one another. We need to be including one another. We're all on the same journey. We're all headed for the same destination. And we need to be helping one another along as we go on that journey. Proverbs chapter 20 and verse 11 says, "Even a child is known by his deeds, whether what he does is pure and right." Don't think that because I'm just a kid, it doesn't matter what I do, if I obey my parents or if I treat people the way. Even a child is known by his deed. We have exceptional young people here. And I hope that you'll be known for purity and righteousness. I want to introduce you to somebody else. Her name is, I'm going to butcher this, Priyanshi Somani. She is a mathematical calculation genius. At age 11, she won the 2010 Mental Calculation World Cup. Did you even know there was such a competition? How many of you have aspired to go to the... Never mind. She was the youngest competitor in the entire competition. She won it, hands down. The winning question was she had to mentally compute the square root of 10 six-digit numbers. I'm assuming that what that means is she had to add them together mentally and then compute the square root of it. She did it in 6 minutes and 51 seconds. Most of you are aware that I would still be working on that problem next week due to my reputation for pulpit math. Isn't that crazy? Mathematical addition, multiplication, and her specialty is square roots. She can figure square roots. Later on, she figured, I think it was 10 six-digit numbers in like 2 minutes. But you know what? As impressive as that mathematical ability is, much more valuable is the obedience of a heart, from the heart of a person who is convicted of his or her sin and trusts in Jesus as the only person, the only name by which he or she can be saved. If you can do that square root thing, I'd like to talk to you afterwards. I'd like some hints. But on the day of judgment, the Lord isn't going to give you a square root problem. He's not going to give you a multiplication problem or addition. He's not going to ask you geology questions or astronomy questions. And he's not going to ask you what your percentile was in the general population on a standardized IQ test. The only thing that'll be important then is whether you serve God. And that is much more valuable than any of those other talents that sometimes people have. If you need to do that this morning, if you need to begin your life of service to God by obeying His will, responding to the gospel, then we want to invite you as we stand and sing.